Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
Last week, we talked about the pervasive nature of suffering in our lives and briefly introduced the Four Noble Truths as a diagnosis of this human pathology. Again, the Four Noble Truths are the truth of suffering, the truth of the origin of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the way to the cessation of suffering. We've really focused on the truth of suffering last week in its great variety of forms. The Buddha asks that we understand our suffering, a practice we can potentially take into every waking moment. Let's now focus on the second truth, the diagnosis. It expresses a conditional relation, stating that suffering is consistently conditioned by one experiential factor in particular, craving. We can say that craving is a necessary condition of suffering, or craving gives rise to suffering. We'll see a lot of giving rise to in this series of talks. The Buddha recognized that each element of phenomenal experience, including our deepest aspirations, arises impersonally from causes and conditions, and in turn drives the arising of other phenomena. This universal principle is expressed in the teaching of conditionality, contingency or cause and effect, most typically formulated in the suttas as follows. When this is, that is. From the arising of this comes the arising of that. When this isn't, that isn't. From the cessation of this comes the cessation of that. This, in a nutshell, might be considered the Buddha's greatest insight, the one which cracked open our deluded and persistent misperception of the world to reveal the true nature of reality as well as the source of our suffering. The great beauty of conditionality is that in discovering how the human pathology arises step by step, it also provides a handle on how the condition ceases step by step when overturned through practice. Let's use fire to illustrate this principle concretely. Fire is contingent on at least each of the following conditions. 1. Heat. 2. Fuel, usually hydrocarbon-based. And 3, oxygen. When all three of these are present, all else being equal, there's fire. Notice we can say of fire itself that it is none other than the confluence of its conditions. That is, it has no independent existence, but arises when all of its conditions, heat, fuel, and oxygen, are present and vanishes when any one of them is missing. Even though we can attribute properties such as emission of light found in no one of its particular conditions. Now, fire is something desirable, for instance, in the hearth, and sometimes undesirable, for instance, in a pile of oily rags and paint cans or in California's forests and grasslands. If we want to start a fire, we need only to ensure that all three conditioning factors are present. If we want to stop a fire, we need only ensure that at least one of the conditioning factors is absent. Any one will do. Dousing fire with water deprives it of oxygen and heat. Blowing on fire may give it more oxygen, but also lowers its temperature. Building a fire break may eventually deprive it of fuel. Of course, fire itself gives rise to heat, which then becomes a condition for the next moment's fire. In short, understanding conditionality allows us to engineer desirable outcomes when it comes to fire. Ultimately, we hope through Buddhist practice to bring the fires of suffering under some degree of control. We cannot will suffering to end. Don't worry, be happy. But we can, with effort, control many of its various conditions, such as craving. It happens that we cannot will craving to end either. Don't crave, be content. But we can look for the conditions of craving, such as feeling, and then try to control those, and so on. This is the genius of the Buddha's teaching of dependent co-arising. It should be noted that the specific mechanisms of conditionality are not of particular relevance. We don't need to know why oxygen is necessary for fire, only that if one thing arises or ceases, the other thing arises or ceases. The 12 links of dependent co-arising are a kind of elaboration of the Four Noble Truths. However, instead of attributing suffering to a single factor, craving, it acknowledges the complicity of a wide swath of factors in this massive suffering, each of which can potentially provide a point of engagement through the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path. In dependent co-arising, we move beyond a single conditioning factor to comprehend the whole snarl of conditioning and conditioned factors. In doing this, we can track various themes: the conditioned development of the self from agent into articulated and needy personality, the presumed nature of reality and of subjects and objects, cognizance and intention, learned habit patterns, and continuity of samsaric processes from life to life. All of these things get entangled with craving and so trap us in suffering. The more we explore conditionality, the more it seems that all elements we experience are contingent on other elements, which are contingent on still other elements, and so on. In this way, everything seems to be in constant flux, groundless, with nothing we can rely on. This can be disturbing, but it can also be liberating. It makes our world of experience quite malleable if we but know where to tweak. The problem is that when scaled up into a network of such factors, each related to other factors through multiple conditions and effects, the resulting system can be quite complex and difficult to track, more of a tangle with many loops, overlaps, cross-entanglements, and collateral effects, with fires burning at many sites at once. It becomes, in other words, like a hopelessly entangled wad of yarn, knotted and difficult to disentangle. Nonetheless, the Buddha takes us straight through the snarl. This is the purpose of the 12-fold chain. Each factor is allocated exactly one conditioning factor, while other conditioning factors, always there, are sidelined. This is an expository sleight of hand that requires of us that we implicitly qualify the arising of each link with all else being equal, or given other requisite factors. Here's the standard formulation of the chain. Because of ignorance, formations. Because of formations, cognizance. Because of cognizance, name and appearance. Because of name and appearance, the sixfold sphere. Because of the sixfold sphere, contact. because of contact, feeling, because of feeling, craving, because of craving, appropriation, because of appropriation, becoming, because of becoming, birth, because of birth, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair arise. Thus does this mass of sufferings arising come to be. We gain a shorter overview if we just simply represent this as ignorance gives rise to formations, formations give rise to cognizance, cognizance gives rise to name and appearance gives rise to the sixfold sphere, the sixfold sphere gives rise to contact, contact gives rise to feeling, feeling gives rise to craving, craving gives rise to appropriation, appropriation gives rise to becoming, becoming gives rise to birth, and birth gives rise to this mass of suffering. For simplicity, we can refer to this as the chain, for the chain is the very topic of this series of talks, with 12 links in the chains. In the corresponding book on this topic that I'm writing, there are 12 chapters representing the 12 links. And we are currently talking about the last, this massive suffering. A simile the Buddha sometimes uses to describe this and other chains of conditionality is the flow of water, lending a naturalness to this otherwise puzzling progression. Just as, monks, when rain descends heavily upon some mountaintop, the water flows down along with the slope and fills the clefts and gullies and creeks. These being filled, fill up the pools. These being filled, fill up the ponds. These being filled, fill up the streams. These being filled, fill up the rivers. And the rivers being filled, fill up the great ocean. In the same way, monks, ignorance is the condition for formations. Formations are the supporting condition for cognizance. Cognizance is the condition for name and appearance, and so on. Since these talks begin at the end of the chain and ends at the beginning of the chain, in order to avoid confusion, I'll often mix metaphors a bit and use the words upstream and downstream in reference to the links of the chain. We begin downstream with the present talks at the ocean of sorrow, lamentation, grief, and despair that characterize the human condition, or this massive suffering. And we will work our way upstream, link by link, past the pools of craving, and finally reach the droplets of ignorance that are the source of it all. Let me very quickly introduce each of the links, again moving from upstream to downstream, that is, from ignorance to this massive suffering. Ignorance is the failure to see the delusive nature of the world as almost all of us experience it. Formations are conceptual and intentional choices we make as we perceive, anticipate, and plan. Cognizance is the comprehension of the world based on these conceptual choices. Name and appearance is the world we cognize, the objects we're cognizant of. The sixfold sphere is the process of awareness from the viewpoint of the senses. Contact is the encounter of me and an object of the world. Feeling is the immediate affective evaluation of what is contacted as pleasing or painful. Craving is the neediness triggered by what is contacted and felt. Of course, it is at the same time the source of suffering. Appropriation is the identification of what is craved, along with our views about the world as me and mine. Becoming is the growth of the experiential world and the consolidation of a personality within that world based on appropriation. Birth is the projection of what we have become into a new life, that is, into a rebirth. This mass of suffering is suffering at the scale of samsara, the suffering we experience now, but also that we are born into again and again, life after life, until we're liberated. Each link ceases in exactly the same way suffering ceases in the Four Noble Truths, through the development of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is a kind of universal elixir for the human condition. Each link along the chain can be approached by applying the same template that is applied to suffering in the Four Noble Truths. For instance, applying it to craving gives us craving, which is to be understood, the origin of craving, which is feeling and which is to be abandoned, the cessation of craving, which is the cessation of feeling and which is to be realized, the way to the cessation of craving, which is the Noble Eightfold Path and which is to be developed. The path, as the cure-all for all that ails us, serves to weaken and finally break down the links of the chain. In fact, the various factors of the path tend to have some specialization in this regard. For instance, as we'll see, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, known as the ethics group within the path, with the support of right intention and right effort, tends to weaken craving, the weakest link in the chain. As craving weakens, so do subsequent factors, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi. The samadhi group tends to weaken upstream links, which, in the end, results in the utter breakdown of the entire chain. A doctor may prescribe the appropriate cure, but that does not mean that the patient will take his pills without fail, give up smoking, drinking, and poker, properly prep for surgery, make necessary dietary modifications, do the proper stretches and lifts, and so on. However, just as a serious ailment is likely to produce a more compliant patient, this mass of suffering also provides the impetus for doing something about it. The Upanishad Sutta is striking in that it presents the links of dependent co-arising that entangle us in this mass of suffering step by step, but then follow further links that disentangle us. Suffering is the pivot, both the end result of the human pathology and the starting point of its resolution. Yes, there is an upside to suffering. So the entire list of links looks like this. Ignorance gives rise to formations, gives rise to cognizance, gives rise to name and appearance, gives rise to the sixfold sphere, gives rise to contact, gives rise to feeling, gives rise to craving, gives rise to appropriation, gives rise to becoming, gives rise to birth, gives rise to this mass of suffering. Then this mass of suffering gives rise to faith, gives rise to joy, gives rise to delight, gives rise to tranquility, gives rise to happiness, gives rise to samadhi, gives rise to knowledge and vision, gives rise to disenchantment, gives rise to dispassion, gives rise to emancipation, gives rise to the knowledge of the destruction of the fermentations. In the later tradition, the additional links are referred to as transcendent dependent co-arising. For as whereas the standard 12 links mire us in samsara, the additional links show us how we transcend that samsara. Recognizing the full nature and depth of this mass of suffering can drive us either to urgency or to despair. It's when someone who is overcome and overwhelmed by suffering that he sorrows and pines, cries, beating his breast and falling into confusion. Or else, overcome by that suffering, he begins an external search, wondering, who knows one or two phrases to stop this suffering? The result of suffering is either confusion or search, I say. Confusion or search are matters of motivation. Life-altering decisions generally arise from a sense of urgency that demand big acts of faith, and therefore enormous courage. They are way beyond the reach of the timid or the deniers, who cling fearfully to their certitude. This is the courage of the great explorers, the hippies of yore on a quest in India with nothing but a backpack, and more commonly of the betrothed or the career-bound, stirred by deep longing or by desperation. Establishing ourselves on the path toward awakening will shake our lives to the core, and this will demand particularly courageous faith. The Pali word for faith, saddha, apparently means, etymologically, placing the heart on, and therefore wholeheartedness. Buddhist wholeheartedness takes the form of refuge, trust in, and devotion to the three sources of Buddhist wisdom. The Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, our original teacher, his teachings, and the historical and living teachers, the ones who know one or two phrases. Refuge, so named because it is the alternative to despair, makes the mind open and receptive, devoted, elated, and trusting. With refuge, we put aside our already calcified modes of thinking and open ourselves to the teaching so that we can begin to make rapid progress. Otherwise, we will lack the will and energy to undertake the difficult understanding and practice of the Dhamma, and the 12 links of dependent co-arising will lie unread or uncomprehended in our Dharma books. The sequence in the transcendent chain that leads downstream from faith, joy gives rise to delight, gives rise to tranquility, gives rise to happiness, gives rise to samadhi, gives rise to knowledge and vision, gives rise to disenchantment, gives rise to dispassion, gives rise to liberation, gives rise to knowledge of the destruction, refers to qualities of mind that pool together in right samadhi, the final factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. It is in right samadhi that we most clearly see the functioning of the 12 links of dependent co-arising, dispel ignorance, ignorance is the most upstream of the chain, and attain liberation. Implicit here is the rest of the Noble Eightfold Path, which also culminates in right samadhi. This concludes our discussion of this mass of suffering. Next week, we'll begin discussion of its conditioning link, birth. Thank you.